Thank you for your time, Maestro David Frey.
Thank you.
And welcome to Timișoara.
Thank you very much.
In playing Bach's music, several critics have compared you with Glenn Gould. And I must confess, I really don't understand why. From my point of view, you always looked for lyricism in Bach's music in comparison with Gould's mechanical style of playing. Am I right or wrong?
Comparison are always wrong in a way. I never pretended to be at the level of Glenn Gould because anyway, even if it's very different, I agree with you. I never considered myself as talented and gifted and genius as Glenn Gould was, obviously. But what you said is true in a way that I really always tried to make the piano sing. But I wouldn't say that Gould was not singing himself. It was
somehow
just,
he remained expressive.
Yes.
Somehow.
Somehow, yes, in a very unexpected and unusual way. But he was lyrical in his way, let's say. My way is maybe more normal, let's say. But yes, he was very analytical. And yes. For me, being analytical is important, but it's not the goal of an interpretation.
Of course.
It's just one step in the process.
Yes.
But it's not the final destination of it.
In what way was Gould groundbreaking in playing Bach's music, from your point of view?
I mean, I think that the important input of Glenn Gould was the fact that he understood that, in a way, he had to kill the modern piano to play Bach, in a way that it was this great instrument of Romanticism and of 19th century, you know? So he had to reinvent kind of a new instrument, a new sound, and something that was more abstract, in a way, and less sensual also, let's say, in terms of harmonics and things. And then you can get this clarity of the contrapoint. So that was the great idea of his. But I think that before him, you had somebody like Rosalind Turek also, who did a bit the same kind of work. But you know, to be honest, I was a great admirer also of more romantic Bach players like Edwin Fischer, for example.
Yes.
Whom I think is now, even today, still modern in a way, even if sometimes you have like this kind of basses that he added, or things that we shouldn't do today, but there is something intemporal in his interpretation that is very impressive. And same thing for the Vol Temperato Clavier of Sviatoslav Richter, the first book. It's also very, very impressive, I think.
Also, in my humble opinion, Pariah did very well in Bach's.
Of course, yeah, yes. Yeah, also, yeah, yeah, sure.
How difficult is to find the balance in Bach's music? Not to be too romantic, but also not to be too mechanical.
It is difficult, and for each piece, I would say that it's a new challenge, because for each piece you need to find another balance, another vision, another instrument sometimes, because you cannot play the partitas the way you play the French suite, for example. French suite are more connected to the harpsichord, I would say, respect to the partita, yes, in terms of sound. And so it's obviously very difficult. And you know, art is very, very often about being on the edge. So it's very interesting to play with these limits, being very expressive without being romantic, but at the limit.
Yes.
So what is exactly the limit? You know, each person will find his own limit. But I know where are my limits, and I try always to push the boundaries as far as I can without, in my opinion, being romantic. But sometimes the people told me, oh, your way of playing Bach is very romantic. And I said, no, it's expressive. Romantic is just another way of being expressive. But the intensity of the expression, it doesn't mean it's romantic.
Yes.
You know, because the intensity of the music, of the feelings at Bach time were the same as today. The human beings still loved, hated, were jealous, were, you know, angry, or you know, the feelings were the same, and the intensity of these feelings were the same. So it's just the way you go to the expression that are different when you play classical, baroque, or romantic music.
Speaking about balance in playing music, for a long time you avoided playing Chopin. It wasn't easy, perhaps, to find the balance because of his duality, both romantic and classical, a dualism so present in some of his compositions.
Yeah, Chopin is a very, in my opinion, Chopin is maybe one of the two or three most difficult composers for the piano, I think, even if he was really totally dedicated to the instrument. But it's very, very complicated to find the freedom in Chopin inside of a structure that has to be clear. But in a way, you know, I started to play Chopin when I, after all this work, work I did on Bach, because I found that Bach needed, in my opinion, this kind of freedom that is inside a very clear structure. So in a way, the rubato with Chopin can be very much helped and understood when you play baroque music, in a way. The thing that changed a bit is that the rubato in romantic music, in my opinion, is made on longer periods. What I mean is that in Bach's music, for example, the rubato you can do, it's on one beat, and then you immediately take back the next beat. So yes, it's very, very short. In romantic music, like Chopin, Schumann, you can do it on few bars, you know?
Yes.
So it's just the proportion of the rubato is different, but the principle is the same.
What connections can you establish between Schumann's piano concerto and your inner spiritual world?
I think that Schumann is still very modern to our ears and for some people in the audience, because Schumann is very often unexpected. It's sometimes very difficult to understand how Schumann brings that section just after this section. It's not always logical to our ears. So to understand it, you need really to get into his, what we say today, what we call today psychology. And it's very interesting to see how much Schumann found a very personal way to express his own distress and torment and things like that. So it's full of humor in the way that it's humor in German, you know, like it's a matter of mood. And the mood of Schumann is like a sky in mountains, you know, that is always changing. And so you have to accept that. You have to accept to be in a logic that is not totally yours and to be surprised. Yeah.
Talking again about balance in playing a composition, when you play this concerto, maestro, how much is Schumann and how much is David Frey?
I hope that everything is almost, I mean, about Schumann. I never pretended and I never wanted to be in front of the composer. I'm just at the service of the composer and of the piece. Obviously, I bring my own soul and my sensitivity and things, but I always try to be connected to the score. And my teacher, Jacques Rouvier, was really somebody who was extremely careful about respecting the composer and what the composer wrote. But to understand the composer, you have also to make choices, obviously. And these choices are what we call interpretation.
When you play this concerto, are you thinking just how the work affects your spiritual world, or do you think in the same time how could it have affected the composer himself?
As an interpreter, I always try to find the universal side of it, because if a piece of art becomes what we call a masterpiece, it means that the individuality of it and the connection to the composer became something that we all share. So I always try to find the way to make it be your story, you know. This is why it's beautiful.
How would you describe your musical partnership with Romanian conductor Cristian Macellaru?
I'm glad you asked, because actually it's the first time I play with him, and at the first rehearsal I was very, very impressed, I have to say. And I'm not that picky, but I'm not always like that. And I was very, very fascinated by the way he was doing music with the orchestra. It was never about silly logistic or, you know, just being together. Never. And this is the kind of musician who understands that being together doesn't mean to be together vertically. It means to breathe together.
To flow the music.
Yes. So to be together horizontally, not vertically. I'm not sure I'm clear enough.
I understand.
If you understand.
Perfectly.
Yes. So I was extremely grateful to hear what he said to the orchestra. That was always about taking a phrase and starting a new phrase, really beginning from the last note of the phrase and always trying to find a line and a tension between different lines. And that's something extremely important, and that's what we call in general chamber music. And for a concerto like that, that's the best way you can play this, I think. Yeah.
How would you describe your partnership with Maestro Riccardo Muti, one of the famous conductors and of course your wife's father?
Yeah, actually I was extremely lucky when I was a young musician. Now I can really realize how lucky I was, because I started with wonderful, wonderful conductors. I started with Kurt Mazur, with the Orchestre National de France already. I started with Riccardo Muti, with Christoph Eschenbach, musicians that are, in my opinion, major, really, musicians. And so with Muti, it was, it's always a school of rigor, you know. So I played this concerto with him, for example, and he really tries to play it really really as classical as it can, you know, and to find inside this classical structure something romantic. But it's interesting to, as I said before, to be always on the edge, because it's never interesting to be only romantic or only classical. It's always interesting to find in each style something from another style, in a way, just to make it ambiguous, in a way. I don't like things that you can resume with one word. I think that the greatness of art is ambiguity. And Muti, despite his reputation, maybe, is somebody who is very classical. So he can play any repertoire. He will always try to find the structure and the logic in it and the organic way of presenting the elements of the composition. And so that's why I was fascinated when he did a piece like Symphonie Fantastique, you know, by Berlioz, which can be heard very often like a collage, you know, like, you know, different spots just put together. And with a musician, with him, everything makes sense. And you understand why something that didn't seem really logical just appears at this time. And that's the work of a musician, I think, in a way. Just to make the people understand how it's built and why it's built like that. And to go back to our discussion before, that was the greatness of Glenn Gould, I think. He made the people understand how the piece was made. You can like or not like the way he was doing it, but people had the impression to understand and to be able almost to write down the score. So people want to understand, to be more moved and interested by what they hear.
What should be the greatest virtue in a pianist, Maestro David Frey?
I mean, in my opinion, the greatest virtue for a musician, not only a pianist, is being a poet, being somebody inspired, somebody intense, and once again, somebody who gave really sense to what he's playing, not just to play the notes. So what I like is people who are singing, speaking. The pianists I prefer are the people you have the impression that they play only for you. And even if you are with 2,000 people in the hall, you have the impression that he just plays this for you and he understands you. And that's why your great compatriot Radulupu did, for
yes.
example.
Yes, so, he was a poet of the piano.
So
yes.
Radu, I had the chance to meet him a few times, and he was always the most charming and the deepest person, you know. He was exactly a human being that corresponded to the musician he was, which is not always the case,
yes.
by the way. So it was interesting to see that, you know, sometimes I say that you have three different levels. At least you have the pianist, and for me the pianist is the lowest level. Then you have the musician, which is more important, and then you have the human being. And these three persons with Radulupu were at the highest level.
In your case, I think there is no separation between music and life.
In my case, yes, there is no separation because I'm always haunted by music. And my life, in a way, is dedicated, yes, to my love for the music. This is obvious, yeah. And the more I get older, the more I am grateful to be able to fill my life with music, yeah.
How difficult is for a great musician like you to find the balance in his life?
It depends on the period of my life. In this moment, I am playing a lot, much more than ever, I think. So I did a lot of concerts. And I was very happy, actually, to play, because after the COVID, I had almost no concert, as all my colleagues. But then I really understood the great opportunity, the great chance that it was to be a musician and to play for the people. So in a way, it helped me to understand and to like much even more my job. Obviously, which is difficult. I think that is difficult is to find a balance with my family, because yes, I have a wife and a daughter, and I am very, very much out of home in this moment, at least. So sometimes I feel a bit guilty, but it's just, you know, it won't be always like that, I guess.
What are the spiritual and physical elements behind David Frey's art of playing the piano?
I would say that if you are an artist, I mean, if you try to be an artist, everything can be a food for your music and for your art. I mean, you can find in anything, even the most unexpected things, motif of inspiration in a way. Inspiration doesn't come always from the object that you are seeing. It comes from the way you are seeing them. So you can decide to see everything in an artistic way, an inspiring way. So that's what I try to do. But all of the form of arts are interesting to me. Paintings, especially, I would say, literature, poetry, architecture, and obviously, I would say everything that you can feel in your life, love, first of all, because when you feel love for something or for somebody, you grew up.
How would you describe your evolution as a pianist? as a human being?
I'm not sure I'm the best judge for this. This year I did some concert that I was satisfied, some other I was not, so it didn't change in a way, because it was the same before. I think I'm the worst critic of myself. Sometimes I suffer a lot of not being sufficient, but what gives me some hope is that I'm just growing and I'm just in progress. So I consider myself as a human being and a musician in progress. And in this progress, sometimes you have steps that are very, very exhilarating, you know, like very, very joyful. And sometimes you have the impression that everything is easy and so beautiful. And sometimes it's the contrary. But you have to just to see the global picture of it. So despite accidents or things, just to see where you are going in and if the global direction is more or less the one you would like to go to. So I would think that in terms of phrasing, colors, freedom, I'm finding sometimes things that I find interesting, and I'm in general much more happy to do music than ever.
Which is great.
It doesn't mean that it's always good, but it means that also the simple pleasure of doing the music is maybe more present. And that is something that I didn't allow to myself so much in the past, maybe.
What is it, as you go forward through music and life, that you try to achieve artistically, creatively?
Achievement is not a term that corresponds
with
to
you.
Me.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't think I will ever think and say that I achieved something. I don't think so. Once again, as I told you, I always consider myself as a work in progress. So achievement, in a way, is just being happy with what you are doing and to love. I think love for the music, love for people. I mean, this is what is the best food for a human being, I think. So if you can feel these feelings, then your life is not totally a failure, maybe.
Thank you very much, Maestro. It was an honor for me. Thank you.
Thank you for me, too. Thank you. Hi, everybody. This is pianist David Frey. I invite you to listen to the great show Symphonic Contemplations on Radio Timișoara.